I was given that queer kiss shot of the protagonist. Oh, yeah. And like being able to kiss on screen in an animated film unapologetically. I desperately wanted that shot because, you know, as a queer person, I'm just like, I just want to rep that. Yeah. I just want to rep that.
This is Valerie Lim. Valerie is a 3D animator who has experience in both video games and animated feature films. She's based in Montreal and is most well known for her work during the production of the film Nimona while she was at DNEG Montreal. Valerie now forms a part of Agora's core team as a senior animator.
I've always told my friends that animators are like closeted actors. We just don't want to be in camera, but the performance is still in the work that we do. I think my childhood felt extremely lonely because I didn't have much representation as an Asian, Southeast Asian, as a woman, and as a queer. My anger took me places where I just wanted to show the world that it doesn't matter who you are. There's always gonna be someone faster, better, stronger, always. So it's never about comparing yourself to them. Mm-hmm. It's about finding what you're capable of, knowing that you're capable of that, and that a lot of the times productions do set up a time that is impossible. My hat is just to keep my hair from being in my face.
Okay. It's a really cute hat, I like
Thank
it.
Thank you. Thank you.
I like your style.
Thank you.
Welcome.
Thank you.
Thanks so much for joining us and for taking the time to speak with us today.
Well, thank you for having me.
Yeah. While looking at your background, I noticed that you've been in the industry for 12 years.
It's been 12 years. Like, sometimes you don't even see it pass. You just go with it, right? And yeah. The years pass, and all of a sudden, 12 years. It's wild.
Yeah, your first experience was with the company New Breed.
Yes, New Breed. That was like right out of school. Emil is actually the CEO, and he brought me in. And that was a really great experience. It was like dipping my feet into the industry, and I really enjoyed it, yeah.
Did you meet him through your Dawson school?
Yeah, he was my teacher.
Okay.
Yeah, amazing teacher. Taught us a lot.
Awesome. I can't, there's so many people that get their jobs through their teachers, their first jobs, myself included.
Yeah?
So.
Oh, shit.
Yeah, that's really cool. But you weren't there for very long.
No, it was only for a contract, and it was at Ubisoft. I only did, like, a little bit, like, we were kind of just coming in to help out the production in cinematics for Assassin's Creed 3, but we weren't there very long.
So you were doing cinematics, and then did you do any like in-game stuff?
Eventually I did do in-game stuff, but that came later on in my career. I was mostly on cinematics, and then after that I went to Ubisoft. Like, it helped me get my footing. And then I went to Ubisoft to be in also cinematics. But as the years went on, I still managed to be in gameplay for Reflector.
You sort of jumped through like cinematic work, in-game work, and then film work, and that's not really common. I think people usually stay in one lane for a lot of times. And I wonder, like, is it people that you want to work with, or are you chasing projects, or?
It's a little bit of both. I think I started in games, and then after that, I did take iAnime classes because I really wanted to improve on my acting and my animation, because a lot of what I did in games was mocapped, which isn't a bad thing, you know, like mocap always provides such a strong base for you to build upon. But I really wanted to try out like keyframing. That was always mm-hmm. my dream to make movies. So I took classes, and then I then transitioned to a job in feature film.
Was that through mostly recommendations or people that you worked with before, or also other teachers, or how?
Also a teacher, my iAnimate teacher.
Okay.
Was the one who brought me at L'Atelier to work on Ballerina.
You must be a really good student.
I try. I don't know, I just try my best, and I guess like they appreciate that. Like myself as an animator too, I think I appreciate it when people put themselves in their work, and they, you know, like it shows that they have passion for what they do.
Would you say that you're, this is kind of a hard question to phrase, but some people feel like they have a more like natural instinct for animation, and then there's some people who are sort of more hardworking towards getting there. I don't know if that makes sense.
Yeah, it does. It totally does. I know what
you're talking about. Do you feel like you fall in some part of that spectrum?
Oh, absolutely. I'm 100% the person who does not have the talent in animation, but has worked towards understanding it better and, you know, being able to animate. But innate talent was not my thing.
It's not always easy to have that kind of self awareness and know where you land there, which I also think I'm the same way, yeah. By the way. So you said you took some iAnimate classes for acting. That's kind of what you were doing to make the transition into feature from games?
At first, I think the first class that I took at iAnimate was for body mechanics. I really wanted to nail down physics and stuff, because when we were at Dawson, it was more like you got to learn the process from A to Z in animation. Like, it's not just animation, it was modeling, it was rigging, it was everything.
Yeah.
So we didn't really get to focus on animation, but I did want to improve my body mechanics to make sure that I was able to sell something believable before jumping into acting.
Mm-hmm. Do you prefer one or the other, either games or feature?
I think both have things that I enjoy. For sure, feature film animation is where I feel like I can be at my most creative. I think I love shooting references. Mm-hmm. I think they're a lot of fun, and a lot of fun things can come out of that. And it makes me feel like a bit more of an actor. Yeah. I've always told my friends that animators are like closeted actors. We just don't want to be in camera, but the performance is still in the work that we do. Mm-hmm. And in games, I do find that there's a bit more of a, I don't know if this is right to say, but there's a bit more of a life-work balance. In my experience, I felt like I was able to live a bit more in terms of like overtime and stuff.
Yeah, that was going to be my next question. Like, do you feel like one was more taxing on you as a person than the other? Which, I guess, feature film is more taxing.
Yeah.
So one thing I have noticed after a few years of working in the industry is you can easily sort of reach kind of a plateau where, like, you know, you're going in and out of work every day, and you're just kind of, you plateau in your skill levels. Is there anything that you do intentionally, now that you're already employed and everything, that you do intentionally to be better or to better your skill?
I definitely always chased projects as well. Okay. I think where I felt the most inspired was where I wanted to be, because that's where I could push my animation to the max. Mm-hmm. When I cared about something, like, I cared about everything that I did, you know, like, it's still my art. It's still a piece of myself that I'm putting forward. But things that I really cared about, things that really gave a message that I wanted to send to the people, like, that's why I'm an animator. I still want to inspire people like it's inspired me. Mm-hmm. Through, you know, stories and stuff, like storytelling. If that really drives me, then I know that I can do my best work, and my best work is going to be pushed as much as I can.
Interesting. Yeah. So how have you kept yourself from, because we can't always choose the project, right? It is kind of a privilege to be able to choose what
Absolutely.
Project you work on. So how do you keep yourself sort of invested when the message is not necessarily something you care about, or,
you know, like, animation is the art form that I've chosen to really, you know, like, for my life, right?
Yeah.
And I just find parts of it, you know, like, even if the message to the movie or to the game or to something isn't something that I'm necessarily super motivated by, I will find things that motivate me. Just like, if I want to focus on body mechanics this project, or if I want to focus on spacing, timing, there's always something that I want to focus on to better my craft.
Okay, that's interesting. So you pick like a field that you want to focus on.
Yeah.
That is independent from what the project is.
Yeah.
That is your personal thing that you're... Okay, that's really cool. I might practice that too. That sounds like a really cool idea. Yeah, because I do struggle with that sometimes, like, not looking at animation as a product. because I feel like when I do, it's really hard to care. And if you don't care, then it doesn't look good.
Yeah, so. Exactly.
Yeah.
But I think there's also a fine balance of like making sure that you also protect yourself and your energy and your bandwidth. Because if you can't be at 100 or like 500% every day, which I've been doing for a lot of my career, like it's, I just care so much about what I put out that sometimes I burn myself out. And sometimes you have to take a step back and make sure that you're not burning like everything that you have, all of the energy, so much so that after work you don't have the energy or the the want to do anything else, you know, but sleep.
Yeah. I also find like having a little bit of separation from the work also helps the work, because it it's almost like, you know, when you go to like a perfume shop and you have to, you're smelling all the perfumes and they make you smell a little coffee.
Absolutely.
In between.
Yeah.
To like revamp your.
Exactly. And that's why like work-life balance is so important. You can't do your best work if you're running at 500% every day. That's just not possible. So having proper rest, taking care of yourself is part of your craft as well.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. There are some questions I want to ask you, and I'm really struggling with them because I want to make sure that I you know, I don't make the talk all about them, because I know I want to respect you as an artist and as an animator, but I don't want to come off disrespectful I ask these things.
Don't worry about
but
it.
I do. I would like to go a little bit more personal, just because you have such a unique perspective that I'm really curious to hear more about, and I think people would really, really also appreciate learning a little bit more from you. So what are some of the animated pieces of work from your childhood that you like resonated with the most?
Miyazaki films for sure. Anime. Growing up, it was really tough to grow up in the household. We had a pretty abusive family, so I would escape often with cartoons and anime and movies and stuff, and I would just, you know, have that moment to myself and then get back to reality. But at least in those moments, I was able to escape and, you know, feel like I was part of something else.
Did you feel like represented in any of the worlds that you were escaping to?
Not really. Back then, there was not that much representation. I think one of the movies that I wish I had as a child was Raya and the Last Dragon. I think Southeast Asian, finally.
Okay.
Rep. And there was a bit of a queer undertone, which I appreciated.
Yeah.
But I think I resonated more with the cartoons just because they were, you know, like the protagonists were always spunky, they were always like fighting back, they were the heroes, right? And I just needed a bit of that kind of narrative for my own childhood.
Do you feel like that would have made a difference? Like, I'm literally asking because I have the same, I guess, a little bit of a similar background where there wasn't a lot of Latino as well.
Right.
I don't know, honestly, I don't know that I'm self-aware enough to know that it would have made a difference for me. So I'm wondering if it would for you.
I think it would have. I think I knew from, you know, the beginning that I was extremely different. Well, extremely different. I mean, I'm not special or anything, but...
You're special.
Appreciate it. What I mean by that is, like, it was really hard for me to be queer. Like, I never understood what it meant, and to have that kind of representation would have been really amazing, because then it would have told me that it's okay, you know, like, it's okay to be myself, and I shouldn't be ashamed of it, and I think it would have given me a lot more confidence as a child, especially not having that kind of parental guidance.
Yeah.
I would have had that kind of, I guess...
Like beacon, or like...
Yeah, a beacon, or, you know, feeling like I wasn't alone.
Yeah.
I think my childhood felt extremely lonely because I didn't have much representation as an Asian, Southeast Asian, as a woman, and as a queer person. So those are like three things that were hard to come by in media at the time. So when like Korra as the Avatar came out, I was pretty ecstatic. I mean, I was already pretty much grown up by then.
Mm-hmm.
But seeing all of this diverse media come out, all these movies, all these TV shows now having diversity means a lot to me, and I can only imagine what it means for, you know, the kids now that are still discovering themselves.
Yeah, The Legend of Korra is a pretty cool show. I liked that a lot too. And you pretty much contributed to one of those shows, like the most recent shows that do represent a little bit more.
My God.
we're talking about Nimona, by the way.
Yeah, I figured. Yeah, it's probably my proudest project.
How did you come about, did you scope it out, or was it just like chance that you...
It was by chance, okay. Completely by chance.
Were you aware of the extent of what Nimona was, or like
No, I didn't know. And then I looked into it, and then I got to talk to animators from Blue Sky, mm-hmm. who told me like the journey that Nimona took, and the fights and the... Not the fights, but like the journey, just like overall how much they had to put into the project, not just in animation, but like the politics and stuff to make sure that the message was good.
Mm-hmm.
What I think was really lucky on my part, and what I think I'm very thankful and forever so grateful for, was the fact that I was given that queer kiss shot of the protagonist and like his partner. Being able to kiss on screen in an animated film, unapologetically. I desperately wanted that shot because, you know, as a queer person, I'm just like, I just want to rep that. Yeah. I just want to rep that. And I got to do it, so I'm so thankful for that. The whole Nimona experience has been so amazing because I never thought that I could finally animate a movie that reps us. Trans people, neurodivergent, queer people. Like, we just want to live, man.
How much did you fight for that shot? Who did you have to...
I didn't have to fight. I actually didn't have to...
Who did you have to square up?
I didn't have to square up. I actually asked my anim director, and he said he actually already thought about giving me that shot, and I was honored. So I'm so thankful. And I know that shot came a long way, came a long way from Blue Sky. It mm-hmm. was rewritten so many times because
oh, really?
When Blue Sky shut down and the whole movie was like scrapped, people thought it was never gonna see the day of light.
Wait, so Blue Sky was fine with it? They were doing it?
Yeah,
like
they
that?
Were fighting for it to
oh,
be in there.
That's awesome, I didn't even know
yeah,
that.
They were trying really hard to have it in there because why not? And they really fought hard. So. All of their journey culminating to Dineg, and for me to get this shot, it's been the biggest honor of my life mm-hmm. to have like so many people fight for it and just to represent properly. It's been a huge honor. So yeah, the whole movie has been a huge honor.
I'm a little jealous. I don't have a shot that like that. Like I did Godzilla roaring. That's cool.
That's
right?
Really cool. My girlfriend loves Godzilla for real. Like she's obsessed, but yeah.
I know that there's constantly like, you know, rewrites of movies or like movies that are, you know, being questioned because they're leaning too far one direction
or
whatever.
Oh my gosh. So one of the things that I'm really passionate about is the fact that I can't help but feel really hurt or just angry or just... I guess frustrated by how corporations have a tendency to look at movies and to look at projects and stories for it to make money. Mm-hmm. And sometimes they want to rewrite parts of the story because they think that it's gonna offend or it's not something for children, or I'm just like, part of me is really offended by that because I am queer, I am who I am, and when you're working on a movie where they're telling you things like, oh, gay people don't have a place in this movie, it's not gonna make money, it's really hard to hear because it's like a true part of yourself You know, like, that's the truth. That's the reality. Mm-hmm. Like, a true part of yourself is being told, like, you're being told by corporates that a part of yourself is not meant to be in a movie because mm-hmm. it won't make money or it just isn't right for the audience or something. Mm-hmm. But here I am, like, living my life unapologetically. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, what am I supposed to take that kind of message, you know?
It's also, like, even looking at it from not, like, from a business standpoint or whatever, it's totally neglecting, like your population evolving into something maybe a little different from what you're used to or whatever.
Right,
you know?
Right.
I don't know if I worded that correctly, but it just feels like we're constantly underestimating what people can handle, and we are kind of baby feeding, like, you know.
Yeah, absolutely. Especially when it comes to animation films, I find that a lot of the times animation has been kind of typecasted or put in a box where it's mostly for children. Mm-hmm. I'm glad that we're finally stepping out of that box more these days, like Intergalactic. Mm-hmm. It's more for adults or like adult cartoons, you know, like it can touch on really heavy subject matter. Mm-hmm. But because animation has been put in a box to be for children, oftentimes they're gonna censor a lot of things. But I find it wild to me, like, there's been so many films that portray like straight couples showing affection, and then the minute it goes to something queer or two people that might be of the same gender showing affection, all of a sudden for a lot of people they want to censor it because all, like, for them it's something that's more taboo or more like,
and it's crazy for me because they also show straight couples doing terrible things, like they show fathers leaving their kids and never coming back, they show, I don't know, they're just being really underestimated. I feel
absolutely.
This question you've kind of answered a little bit already, but I still like to ask it because, especially for people who have been in the industry for a while, because I feel like you start out looking at animation in a certain way, and then as the years go by, it evolves, and then your relationship kind of shifts. And I wonder if that's happened to you, if, you know, you feel like you started out looking at it in one way, and now you're...
I did have rose-tinted glasses when I first started, or when I was still in school. I thought it was going to be, you know, every day the sun shines bright, and we all come to work, and... like, we're never going to be tired, it's just making this project together. But in the reality, the industry could be a little rough. I've had leads that were, you know, a little questionable in the way they led.
Which would mean, if you don't mind being specific?
Oh, no, not at all. I can totally be specific. I think gender played a big thing back then. I don't know. I think it's a little better now. I can't say, you know, like, I can't speak for all the women in the industry or non-binary or trans people. I really think that when I first started in the industry, it was really tough because I was a woman. I only say this because I had a particular lead that did treat me differently because I was a woman, or I am a woman. It's been a little rough. Sometimes people abuse of their power. A lot of the times people abuse of their power.
Are you talking about like more verbal abuse or?
It's been verbal abuse, and I did have friends that have gone through also physical abuse, mm-hmm. which is not acceptable in any shape, way, or form. But because the person is in power, it's always harder to talk about, or when they did talk about it, they weren't believed, you know.
Yeah. And in your case, it was more a problem because of the lead was overworking you or not giving you as many shots as they should have or could have, or...
I didn't mind. At the time I was a junior, I didn't mind what shots I was given. I always appreciate the opportunity to work on anything. But it was more of the way he talked to me. He would sigh when he would review my work, which mm-hmm. was extremely discouraging. When you're always trying your best, he told me to stay and finish a shot while he was walking out the door and going home, so I had to stay overnight. He would Oh my God, this one time. So the way I dress is a little more like androgynous, but sometimes mm-hmm. I like to, you know, maybe dress a little more femme presenting or mm-hmm. masculine presenting. And that day I wore a dress. And I guess it must have been a big shock to him. He made everyone in the room turn around. We were set up in a room at the time. And I was the only girl in the team, and he made all the guys turn around and clap while I stood in the middle, just not mm-hmm. knowing what to do, what to say. It was extremely uncomfortable. But there were instances like that. He would call me when I was on vacation, ask me where I was on my personal phone.
Oh, gosh.
The list goes on. I don't even know where to go with that.
Yeah. Do you feel like this kind of experience made you like almost like hold a grudge over like being a woman?
It made me even prouder to be a woman.
Okay.
My anger took me places where I just wanted to show the world that it doesn't matter who you are, and that gender really shouldn't be a factor, or sexuality, or race.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, no, I'd say it made me love who I was even more, because it made me double down.
That's interesting. I feel like it could go either way.
Absolutely, but I think it's important to...
Yeah, that's definitely fight. The right way to do it. Though. I mean, I don't know if there's a right way, but that's definitely a positive way to do it, for sure. Do you think that... You, like, after having that kind of experience, is there anything that you learn from it in the sense that, like, you look back on it and I'm like, oh, I should have done this, or, like, things that you apply later on
from absolutely. What you learned? Absolutely. Like, back then, you know, like, when faced with a person of power in the hierarchy of the industry, it's really hard to fight back. It's really hard to be able to say something. And later on, when... you know the industry better, or you know yourself better, or you have more confidence, you're like, oh, I should have said that, I should have done that, I should have spoke up, I should have done this, I should have done that.
Mm-hmm.
But honestly, it's okay. You, like, whoever could be in this position reacted how they could with what they were given at the time.
Mm-hmm.
You can't blame yourself. It's important to know that it's not your fault, and that what and how you reacted at the time was just perfect for what you had at the time, like mental mm-hmm. bandwidth, mental health, mm-hmm. Choosing your battles and stuff. I'm sure, like, now looking back, there was probably better ways to go about it, but mm-hmm. at the time, that's just how I was able to react in the moment.
Mm-hmm. It's great that you can... that you can allow to have that perspective to know that that's just the best you could do at the time, which applies to so many things.
So many things.
Yeah, oh my gosh. When faced with, like, so much stress, everybody reacts a little differently, and you can often, like, become somebody else temporarily.
Oh, yeah.
When it's happening. So, is there, like... as a result of, well, maybe not as a result of that, but, like, as a result of your experiences in the industry as a whole, are you now a little bit better at, like, setting boundaries, or?
I do think so. I think that's helped me be where I am today, and setting boundaries and making sure that I prioritize my health. That's something mm-hmm. that I did put to the side for a long time in my career, and I paid dearly for it.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, no, for sure.
And... if, you know, I think we hear the phrase set boundaries, like, pretty often, and I would like to, like, be a little more specific when we talk about it, just to see, because it kind of means a little differently for everybody. And it's also, like, I think for people like you and me, it's particularly difficult just because we don't have, like, I don't know the extent of your family situation, but... you know, we have dogs. That's kind of the thing that we attend to on a daily basis. But that's pretty much it, right? On a daily. I mean, there's other responsibilities, of course. But So there isn't like really something that's kind of pulling us away from the computer per se. You know, there's not something that is dependent on you. So you really have to answer like solely for yourself. Like that's when that the boundary has to be set just for you, not for anything else. So I think that's particularly difficult.
It is. It really is. And growing up, I think I've had my boundaries stripped apart by many forms of abuse. So it's always been so tough. But the thing that you have to remember, and this is what I wanted to get into, like, what happened to me was that I burned out many times. And a burnout isn't easy to spot, you know, like a lot of the symptoms, they just kind of creep up on you. And a lot of times, also, there was kind of like a stigma in the industry that you had to keep going, you had to keep going, you had to keep going. Oh, you're tired? That's normal. That's fine. Like, just keep going. You know, you got to hit this deadline. But eventually what happens is that a burnout can be more than just mental. It could be, and mental is huge, a huge part of, you know, your health. But physically, your body is in decline, like your immune system just vanishes. You have these anxiety attacks, these panic attacks that really affect your body. Sometimes they almost feel like a heart attack. You feel like you're dying. Like, it's horrible. And when you're this stressed in your life for so long, it can really manifest itself and create big problems physically for your body, like diseases and stuff. A lot of autoimmune diseases, you know, have been linked to stress. And I myself have noticed that my body has had a hard time. Like, I had to go to the hospitals and stuff. And they would tell me that you're way too stressed. Like, you're getting ulcers, your stomach is just not functioning properly anymore. And this is just out of stress, you know, like mental health wise is so important too. Because if you let that go, you can find yourself in places where you never thought that you could go, like really dark places. I'll be honest, last year, there was just so many things in life. It wasn't just work. I also got hit by a car and I got concussed from that.
Oh my gosh.
And I was just dealing with so much that I had to admit myself to the hospital for suicide watch. And I never thought I'd be there. You know, like if I told myself 11 years ago or 12 years ago when I first started at school, I never thought that I could be there.
This was last year, huh?
Yeah, it was last year. But I'm really thankful for the help that I've gotten. I'm really thankful for continuing. Because it does get better. It's just that in the moment, you never think that you could get to that place. And it just hits you, you know, like there might be people out there that, that might not believe what it looks like because they've never been there themselves. But let me tell you, as someone who never thought that they could end up there, it hits you like a ton of bricks.
I'm like impressed that you were even able to. Again, all the stuff you're mentioning has like so much like self-awareness involved that people don't always, they're not always able to do this. This is like an incredible skill you have.
Oh, well,
like how can you be so self-aware that you can be like on, you know, I need to time out. Like I need to go to do this thing and take care of myself. I mean, that's impressive, at least to that level, because I feel like when you get there,
I'll be honest, I was really lucky to have the support group that I had. I had my girlfriend, I had my therapist, and had it not been for my therapist telling me, you need to go to the hospital now, then I don't think I would have. Sometimes you kind of need that kind of outside perspective, because when you're stuck in that darkness, it's really hard to see outside from it, really hard. So that's why the best kind of practice a person could do is prevention and noticing the signs of when you're tired. That's okay, you can take a break. It's okay. You don't have to keep going. You can take a break. And to undo a lot of like the things that you learned from a society that wants you to be productive all the time.
This is like a lot more common that people like to admit in our industry. Like just having like burnout to a point where you're just in shambles, I guess.
The stories of meltdowns that you hear in the industry are wild. And instead of lending a compassionate hand, like lending out a compassionate ear or being more empathetic to why that happened, I hear more judgment, and that's rough.
I would like to like have a, and I think I actually, I'm gonna have a little talk with a producer in a couple of days, which I think is gonna be really informative for me, but I would like to understand a little bit better, like why the heck all of the productions are set up in a way that is almost like, like you have to, like you can't, like if you want to do a good job and you want to spend the time and make it look good, which we all do, it's like almost it's inhuman. Like you have to do it.
So my stance on that, I find that the whole system is a little messed up. I find that the whole bidding situation for movies and like seeing which studio is gonna do it for cheaper, faster, and better, there's a triangle. You can't have all three. Something's gotta give.
We're all humans.
We're all humans. We're not machines.
Yeah.
And that's something that really bothers me, because the minute you get that project, you're already set up to fail. Yeah. Unless the artists like die over it, you know, like it's always been like that, and it's something that I really wish could change, because we can't do our best work when we're this exhausted.
And like the thing that bothers me the most is that the person that made that decision is never the person that is doing the work in that time.
Oh my gosh, I can't.
Like I feel like if they did once, they would have a lot more, you know. Like, they would be a lot more careful to say, oh, no, yeah, we can do it in 2 days instead of four.
Exactly.
Like, no, we can't do it in 2 days instead of four. I mean, we can do it in 2 days, but then the person has to stay overnight both days.
That's it. And this is why I find that setting boundaries for everyone is different. But for me, I found that being very vocal about how long this is going to take me and that I'm not going to make the deadline, not because I'm not skilled enough, mm-hmm. but because there's just not enough time that was allotted. The bidding is just not possible. Mm-hmm. So I'm also very vocal about the tech issues that can play into things. Like I'm just vocal about the situation, so then when we get to the point where, oh, you're past your deadline, yeah, I told you why. And I'm not gonna sacrifice my health because of something that I've been set up to fail.
Yeah.
So you gotta tell me which one you want. You want quality, you want time, you want speed, like what is it? Because I can't give all three.
yeah that's also like so hard to do, because we often like link it to, like, for example, if you're feeling like you're not necessarily that confident about your skill level, raising a flag and saying like I might not be able to finish it in that amount of time is really hard to do.
It's really hard to do. I still to this day I have a hard time gauging if it's I maybe didn't work more efficiently or there's something that I didn't do properly. But you know, like this is why I think it's also really good to have like a support system in the industry, like having your friends and talking to them, like, yeah, these are the parameters of what I was given to complete in those days. And you know, to have like that friend be like, oh, same, I can't finish it in that time. Like, and there's always gonna be those animators that are super fast and you're like, how do they do that? There's always gonna be someone faster, better, stronger, always. So it's never about comparing yourself to them. Mm-hmm. It's about finding what you're capable of, knowing that you're capable of that, and that a lot of the times productions do set up a time that is impossible. And talking to friends that, you know, you work with, and, you know, like most people will have an understanding of that, and just like you can be reassured that it's a recurring problem in the industry.
Mm-hmm. I you know, I don't think we've nailed that just yet. I know Agora is really great in a lot of those ways. I feel so far working with them, I feel like there's a lot of people looking out for you, and you can be open in conversation.
Absolutely.
But I also think it's not a perfect system yet, and I feel like I do feel like a lot of the work has to be done like internally, like as artists, and like almost like respecting each other more.
Absolutely.
Is probably like the answer, which sounds very like, you know, fairy tale-esque, but like as soon as you start, like, because I feel like, I don't know if you did this, but even me, when I started out, I, you know, I would always, like, look at people's work and compare it to mine and, you know, but look at it in a, you know, almost in a derogatory way, like, yeah. I don't know, like.
I think we've been, like, kind of raised to compare ourselves to be better, but I don't think that's always a productive thing to do, because you can get overwhelmed and there's always going to be someone better, faster, and like they might even have longer experience or mm-hmm. less experience and still be better. And better, what's better? Art mm-hmm. is art. Art is very subjective.
Yeah.
Essentially, we're all working on a project with someone else's vision, mm-hmm. and their vision might not be always what you see in that art form, and that's okay. You know, like you're mm-hmm. still getting your bearings, you're still like trying to understand the style, and everyone is too, and some people might just get the style faster than others. That's okay. In terms of comparing, like I actually taught at Dawson for one semester, not very long, but the time that I did, I was really proud of my students. Like that's something that I really wanted to tell them, that they should know their self-worth. What I'm seeing, the work that they put out, they're trying, they're learning, and they're doing great. And that's something that I would hope that no person of position in the industry, once they get there, would ever take advantage of that and like tell them that they're not enough. And hoping that we can build a later generation of artists that can come in and be confident about what they can do and see that the problem is innately in the whole bidding system, and just the time they're given isn't enough mm-hmm. for what is expected. I don't know if I answered your question, actually. I might have gone off.
No, but it's still a great point, because, well, there is a fine line too, because there are people that take advantage of that, which I have seen in the past. So it's not like there's, I guess, two sides of the spectrum where like people are, you know, you might be in a production and you might notice that they're underbid and everything is kind of chaotic. And then you're like, well, I guess nobody expects this work to get done. So, which does exist. I have seen it before. Not very often, but I have. So I guess that's where the double-edged sword comes in. But more often than not, the person is going to be killing themselves trying to make something that is worthwhile. Because to be totally honest, it's also in the person's best interest for the thing to look good.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's not just for the product.
That's exactly it. And it's in the person's best interest to look good, because then they might get better shots, mm-hmm. they might get promoted, they might just, you know, move up the salary ladder. They want a good evaluation so the company could see them as an asset. And that whole mindset is really hard to let go of when you're like, oh, but I really want to take care of myself, I need time, I need a break. But if I don't get it in on time and deadline is kind of like impossible, then what do? Oh, I'll just stay up all night. It's really hard.
It's really almost hard. Like, it's so fucked up to look at it in this way, because I feel like I don't want to look at it in this way, because I'll end up resenting everybody else in the industry. But it's almost like the people who make the decision of making the bid day so short or whatever are like banking on the fact that, you know, it's gonna get done anyway because it's the person's livelihood.
That's it.
It doesn't matter how high I put the carrot, the person will still try to jump as high as they can and will do everything in their power to to get the carrot.
And we're artists. Yeah. So our art matters, you know? It's really hard when I've also told myself that, and I'm like, have I become the jaded person in the industry?
I feel like that's the worst way to look at it, though, because maybe there's another side that we're not aware of. But
I'm sure there's really like a lot of things, and you're going to be talking to a producer. Like, I think I've also gone to talk a little bit to a producer who talked about, you know, like getting the project and getting jobs to the company. You know, like there's so many faceted things, but essentially, I think that the people who are looking for the companies and that are making this bidding war happen, they're looking for the cheapest, best, fastest work. And you gotta understand, like they have to understand that they do have a budget, yes, but like it just can't happen that way. It's just
I think we just we just need to be more transparent about what people's budgets can get them in a more realistic way. But if it only happens in one company, then that company will not get any work.
But that's it, right?
It has to be all together at the same time, which is...
Yeah, and that's why I thought that the whole VFX movement, when it happened, and like at the Oscars, when the director said, oh, but VFX is so expensive, special effects are so expensive, then why do you have it in your movie, man? Like, that's what it is. Like,
yeah.
Like, yeah. What do you want me to tell you? Like, it's so expensive, then, yeah.
Well, yeah, there's countless hours of people working on stuff.
So much hours, so much work.
Like, there's hundreds and hundreds of people that don't even get recognized in this.
It just reminds me of the Pikachu surprise face meme. Like, yeah, it's so expensive. What? Bro.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
That's like going to like a, I don't know, Michelin star restaurant and like complaining about the food being expensive. I'm like, come on, you came here, right? You could have gone somewhere else.
I don't get it. Yeah, there's a whole shift that needs to be done in the whole like film, games, everything, VFX, TV industry. You know, like the actors and writers. I'm glad that, you know, like they did the strike because they deserve better pay. Mm-hmm. And like,
do you think that like, I don't know if you've talked about this before, but do you feel like unionizing could be something that would affect us positively?
I think so. I think there's good points to unions. I don't think I'm well informed enough to know everything about unions, but overall I do think that people banding together to fight for, you know, their own well-being is always something positive.
I think it's especially true just because, like, as a single individual, you have such little, like, control over, you know, your work, like, your work situation, all your benefits, or not even just benefits, but, like, your hourly, you know, whatever, the hours that you work, where you work. Like, right now, there's a lot of companies that are... that were working from home from 2020, and then they're kind of like starting to shift back to working in the office, and like people are kind of losing all like the benefits that they had already established, which, you know, they depend on it a little bit because of either family situations or...
No, for sure.
And we have like no way of fighting back, or not fighting, because those are strong words. I don't think that there's a fight to be had. It's more just like having some security beyond just a promise from your employer.
Yeah, no, for sure. I think like a lot of the times we have these promises from employers, and from my experience, I see that they're just words. Like, they just kind of want to bring you in, but the promise isn't actually always fulfilled. And when that happens, it's not just you, it's everyone. And it just sucks that it's always us little potatoes that kind of have to take the brunt of the decisions made higher up. So I do think that banding together unions to fight for what is right and to have a voice within this is important. Yeah.
Yeah, whether it be union or some other solution.
Exactly.
I think the premise of it is the right direction. Yeah. How about... I have kind of a personal question, which seems general, but I'm really wondering how you feel. Do you feel pride in your work?
I do. I do feel pride in my work because, you know, like I do put a lot of myself in it. But sometimes that view kind of shifts when I did put a bit of myself and my health to the wayside and that I had to suffer for it, and not just me. My girlfriend too, my family, everyone that's around me, my friends. Mm-hmm. When I'm in a dark place, I push them away. So I'm not proud of that. And that's something that I definitely want to change. But art-wise, I think art speaks the loudest when you're at your best. And it's a way to express yourself for sure. So even when you're not at your best and you're in a dark place, I mean, it's hard to express yourself for yourself when it's someone else's project. Mm-hmm. So yeah.
Do you find that you have like an outlet besides like work where you express yourself artistically?
I do roller derby. Mm-hmm. I used to until I got the concussion from the car. Mm-hmm. But now I coach, and I'm really proud of what my little derby people are doing.
That's cool.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
They're like super tough, and I'm just really proud of them because it's also such a mental sport. Yeah. The whole mental health thing goes in every aspect of life.
Yeah.
I just find that sometimes work does give you more limitations, and so it's harder to find that balance. But mm-hmm. yeah, I do roller derby. I draw, I dance, I do other forms of expression. I cook, I love cooking.
Me too.
So yeah, there's other outlets in life that I do love exploring as well. It's not just animation. There mm-hmm. are other facets of life that I'm really happy to explore.
Cool. I find that I have a hard time feeling pride in my work. So I was wondering if maybe it has something to do with the comparison with other artists, or I think I'm still kind of working on that.
It's hard. It's really, really hard. I think the more you're able to talk about how you're feeling to your coworkers who are open to having this talk, the more you're going to realize that everyone's kind of in the same boat and mm-hmm. everyone's comparing themselves. Everyone's putting themselves down. We artists are always so hard on ourselves. We're always our own worst critics, right? And that's something that you have to,
that's what like, I mean, you have to work like, towards. That's what I mean when I say like be more respectful of others. It sounds stupid, like it sounds very vanilla when you say it out loud that way, but like it's so fundamentally it would change everything. Because I feel like I also, if I respected other people's work more, I would also respect my own work more, you know?
Amen. Yeah, absolutely. No, for sure. The people, the leads that have done me wrong, or the coworkers that have done me wrong, in a sense where I had trouble with them and they were kind of being really critical and just like overall discouraging and just...
Toxic.
Toxic.
We can say the word, yeah.
The people that were being toxic in the workforce are often people that are extremely insecure about themselves, extremely critical about themselves. So yeah. This is often a coping mechanism where they see other people like that too, because they're not extending that kind of kindness to themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And I do think that the workplace can be so much better if everyone just takes a moment to appreciate everyone around them, no matter their skill level, no matter their experiences, no matter where they come from, no matter what, if they just took a moment to just appreciate them, then they can maybe extend more of that kindness towards themselves.
Do you feel like you could go for 12 more years?
I'm still working on my boundaries. I hope so. I'm doing my best. I still think boundaries are extremely hard. You know, like we talk about it, and I talk about it as if I've got it all figured out, but it's a work in progress every day. Just even setting boundaries takes bandwidth from me because I'm just like, well, but what if it's my fault?
Yeah.
So, you know, it's just
a
whole uphill battle. But for another 12 years, I hope so. I think it's up from here on out. I think the hospital really taught me a lot about myself. I think... it's sad that it took to that point for it to finally like click, but I'm hoping that me talking about this could help others not have to be there for them to take a moment to take care of themselves.
Yeah. I have a few questions from the Agora community that I would like to ask you.
Sure. Is it Andrew?
Actually, they're anonymous, so.
Oh, I'm sure it's Andrew.
We don't know who it is. I'm going to start with a lighter one because...
Oh, shit. I'm nervous now, man.
Wait, where is it? It was a shape-shifting question.
Oh.
Since you worked on Nimona, if you could shape-shift into anything, what would it be?
Oh, my gosh.
And why?
Yeah. A dragon, because I'm really angry all the time and I could spit fire and fly. Sick.
Are you really angry all the time? Because you seem like such a happy person at work.
I've done a lot of work on myself. So much work. Therapy's great. But yeah, no, for real. A dragon, because I've always wanted to fly. I would shapeshift into sometimes inanimate objects because I just want to chill and have no one bother me. I would.
I just picture you like a fork on the table.
A fork. Oh, I would love to be a fork. I'd just be like, yes.
Just stick me in things sometimes.
Yes. Yeah, stick me in that poutine. I want to taste that poutine too. But my gosh, yeah. No, there'd be so many things I'd love to shapeshift in. I think one of the fun things about animation, here we go, an animation talk, is that, you know, you acting-wise, just like actors do, you can live different kind of lives and different kind of perspectives throughout life. So I'd shapeshift into everything.
I think that's a good answer. I feel like I would also, like, I would change my mind every day and just shapeshift into something completely new. I'll ask this one last, actually.
Oh my god.
So, I noticed that you are very openly gay in the workplace.
Hell yeah. Emojis, like rainbow flags every day on the chat, Slack. Everyone cannot get away from my rainbowness.
Was there a time in your life when your instinct was to do the opposite?
Oh yeah. Yeah. Like, this is all still very, not new, but I'd say that the newfound courage to be myself is kind of new, because I've had people support me in the workforce. Like, it took a lot of time before I got this comfortable being this myself outwardly. I was always scared that people would judge me, or, you know, what if I got judged for being queer? And I did have some guys flirt with me in the workforce, you know, when I was a little more feminine presenting. And I was always scared of what were they gonna say if I dressed more like how I wanted to dress or express myself. What if I said I was gay? Like, would that mean that I had less opportunities? Or, like, it's whack. Mm-hmm. So yeah, it took a while for me to just be myself. But thanks to the good people I surrounded myself with, thanks to the good people at work. Like, there's so many great people that surround you in this industry, for sure. And I think those are the people that you should keep close, because they let you be yourself.
Actually, we talked about this one. This one is a little bit about life balance. It just says, how do you deal with the life balance aspect of things? I think this one we kind of mentioned, but if you wanted to add anything, anything that you do in your daily routine that
I try helps. And get up. I try and break myself away from the screen. When the workday ends, I set myself a timer, like an alarm, to say, hey, it's time. It's time for a nice warm bath. It's time for something that you enjoy to do, like just to get your head out of it, especially when you're working from home. So sometimes the boundaries of work and life could be a little blurred. It's easy to stay and just keep going, but you gotta have something to snap you out of it. I like to take warm baths. I like my green tea. I like to talk to my girlfriend behind me that you probably see in the cameras. Yeah, that's what I like to do.
You don't animate outside of work, correct?
Sometimes I do.
Okay.
You know, for fun.
Would that stuff qualify as a break from work if you're doing that?
I think I need something to really break me away from the screen before mm-hmm. I come back to do something for myself in terms of creativity. Mm-hmm. Work does take a lot out of my creative juice. Mm-hmm. So I just need to step away from the screen, do something, replenish a little bit of that creative meter juice, mm-hmm. and then come back and use it for my own art.
Okay. So as a woman in the workplace, do you feel like you need to compensate for something in your work?
Not anymore. I used to, just because of the way I was treated by that lead. I think because of my gender. It wasn't just me, like, it would be other people as well. So I would see that happen in the workforce, and it would scare me, mm-hmm. right? I was still a junior too at the time. But then I actually got to talk to a lot of women in positions of power in the industry, and mm-hmm. just seeing their journey and how they went about it, it just empowered me so much, right? And I hope that, you know, like, it wouldn't be a problem later on, but the reality is that we often feel like we do have to overcompensate, but not anymore. I found my footing.
Nice. Cute in the visual effects behind her also.
Yeah.
Right. And then there's the final question, which is, why Agora?
I have so many people that I've worked with in the industry, and it's such a small industry that you're always gonna cross paths, but I felt like everyone just congregated to Agora. And I've worked with David before. I've always loved his leadership. We worked on Shadow of the Tomb Raider, and I had so much respect for the way he just led our team that I knew coming here I would be happy to have this kind of leadership. And a lot of my friends are here. A lot of the friends that I kept close have a great support system. That can let me be me, mm-hmm. are here, and I just wanted to be surrounded by that kind of energy. So no matter what we do, no matter what kind of projects we'll have together, I know that we can do something good because we're just gonna have fun together.
Is it weird working from home completely, 100%?
I kind of like it.
Do you like it?
I love it. Okay. It's my dog is there. And I still get to talk to people like via Zoom. I know it's not the same as if you were like together, but mm-hmm. I do think that when we do get together, like we're meeting for the first time, I appreciate it so much more. Yeah. When we have our work parties, I think they're so much more fun just because, you know, you've seen this person like on camera, but then you get to see and hang out.
Yeah.
I like it.
Yeah. Well, I just thank you again for taking the time to chat with us.
Thank you so it's much really for great. Having me. It's been a pleasure and an honor. Thanks for giving me this platform to just talk about myself. I hope I wasn't like too much.
No, not at all. And I really hope that I think one of the main goals is something that you kind of brushed on when you were talking, is like being a little more vocal about these things and just putting the information out there. So if one or two people like stumble upon it, like maybe they can relate a little bit and can help them.
Yeah, and hopefully they'll know that it gets better.